Good morning and welcome to the Preventing Grace podcast for November 11th, 2019. Happy Veterans Day.
Thank you.
Thank you for serving our country.
But I was just in the National Guard, so I wasn't like a...
But you were an important part of our national security. No, wait, that's not what I meant to say. We appreciate your sacrifice.
I did jump out of airplanes, so you should actually be really impressed.
I am impressed. I'm very impressed.
You should make me a lunch or something, or make me a dinner.
I can make the leftovers today for the lunch instead of you doing it.
That's great.
I've been enjoying watching the people of Britain argue with each other about the best way to wear the poppy and... whether or not the Queen's single tear was real or put on.
Are they really arguing with that?
A little bit. They seem tetchy this morning.
Why can't they just allow that? The Queen lived through... She was actually living through World War II.
Yeah,
she knew Churchill. She
served in the military.
Yeah, so what? So she can't be having an actual moment of memory? And
she probably can. They're just mean people out there who question everything. Unlike me. I'm not a mean person like that. But I like enjoying other people's arguments, about which I have no investment. It's kind of a gray day. Do people do parades and stuff today?
There's supposed to be a veterans parade in Binghamton, yes.
Are you real? Are for real?
Yeah.
In this kind of weather?
That's the
people
plan.
People would go outside in that?
Yeah, that's the plan. That's what they do.
Well, that's not my plan. I will thank God for... Yes, I will honor them within.
Doubt.
And we never have gone to a parade in Binghamton of any kind.
Well, every parade I know of is cold.
Yeah, every parade that we have... It's like no during summer parades.
Is there 4th of July parade?
I don't know.
Maybe there is, but we're always on vacation then. But every other parade is, frigid...
We have a St. Patrick's Day parade that's
not on St. Patrick's Day. It's before St. Patrick's Day.
It's a long time before.
It's parade day. And you know it's parade day. If you forget, if you have to go anywhere in the morning, like at 8, you'll see college students staggering in green shirts.
To their...
At 8 a.m. They're already tanked.
Yeah.
Waiting for the parade, which happens, I guess, at noon or something.
I don't know.
Because all of the different...
That's the only way to survive
Irish bands.
Is to get really, really, really wasted... Before the parade starts.
I remember it was the first time, your first year I was in Binghamton, I was really shocked.
People up here take their drinking seriously.
It was pretty, yeah.
And that's what Ireland even means. That's the definition of Irish, is just the drinking.
See.
I'm kidding. I know that's not true.
That was very unwoke. I'm not sure if Irish people are covered under the woke.
Oh, no, they're not. They're
insurance
not
policy
of,
against defense.
No, yeah. They're not people of importance or anything, so no.
Okay, so we can make fun of them. I'm one of them, so I suppose
yeah,
I can
so
too.
Yeah, so we're allowed to make fun of them. Oh, I didn't. I thought you were objecting to the drinking thing. You were objecting to the Irish thing. You don't want me to insult your...
Yeah, you were saying you're somehow characterizing all Irish people as drinkers.
And I'm allowed to do that, though, because... Yeah, under the new wokeness.
As opposed to Scottish people like yourself. Scottish people don't drink as much as...
I'm mostly German, unfortunately.
Oh, that's better.
I shouldn't say unfortunately. I'm probably half German.
We could compare.
Yeah, let's not talk about it right now. On Remembrance Day, let me not talk about my ethnic heritage.
I thought you were Scottish. You keep telling me you're Scottish.
I'm directly descended from Robert the Bruce.
Yeah, everyone's directly descended from Robert the Bruce.
No, they're not. You're not.
I am too.
You are not.
If you go far enough back, everyone has royalty in their blood.
But my grandfather traced it back, and his name is actually Robert Bruce Carlson.
Is that because they said, wouldn't that be cool to name it?
No, because the name had been going on for a really long time.
I just doubt the story. I think it's...
Well,
you should wear your jewels and your crown.
We don't have jewels and a crown, but we do have documentation because he did all the genealogical work.
Okay, well, then certainly you should have some inheritance somewhere.
Well, all of that is... The English are poor now. He doesn't.
Well, he's not English. You're Scottish.
Scottish, whatever. Yeah, I know. I should get it straight. We're not here this morning to talk about my ethnic identity. We're here.
You have an intersectionality between you're Scottish and German and a woman.
Oh.
So you have some cred there, except they're all Europeans.
Yeah, no, yeah, I don't have European. Any cred. Yeah,
okay, all right.
None.
I do think it would help if those of us with white skin would stop referring to ourselves as white and start referring to ourselves as some ethnicity, like, oh no, I'm Norwegian, I'm Irish.
Well, that's what Ekimeni or whatever says we should do. We should embrace our lost heritage, identity, whatever. Because that's the only way for people to continue to...
Would they like us then? Would that make a difference?
No. Not unless you're prepared to apologize for your essential
everything
being.
Everything that the Irish have done over the course... All the oppression that the Irish have...
Forever.
Yeah.
And ever. Amen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's not what we're talking about today. We veered far off topic. What we were going to talk about today is that somebody disagreed with me on the internet, and I wanted to address it.
Yeah.
Online.
Because that's...
Instead of writing about it, because that would take a long time.
Well, what you wrote was, this is about your article regarding self-partnering.
Yeah.
So what is self-partnering? Maybe we should start there.
Well, what's the name of that celebrity? There's a young person who grew up in Harry Potter movies, and she's just turned 30, and she's not married. She has an wildly successful movie career. I mean, she's a movie star. That's a thing, to be in million-dollar movies one after the other, and be adored by all. So she's done that, and she's quite young. She's 30, and yet she has not married or had children, and I guess she's not in a relationship with anyone. So she was interviewed for her birthday by, I don't know, Vogue or something. What is her name?
Shoot. Emily Thompson?
No. Oh, my word. That's really Emily.
Who's that?
Yeah, that's not even a person.
I don't know these names. I don't pay attention to this stuff. But
Emily Thompson is not the name of a movie star.
It's not?
No.
Emma Thompson.
That person is like in her 60s.
Oh.
Where have you been? This is a younger person in her 30s.
You know, this is how well we prepare for this show. We know exactly who we're talking about.
I wrote her name down in my article.
I'm gonna Google self-partnering. You could look at your article and see who it is.
I have to figure out which day it was that I wrote the article. It seems like a lot of work. So anyway, she was interviewed.
Emma Watson. I was almost right. So you
got
be quiet.
Both names. I did. Emily Thompson.
Well, no, but I got the sounds like Emily Thompson sounds like Emma Watson.
No,
so it does. So you could make a poem, and they could both be in.
That's terrible.
There she is.
Okay, right. Emma Watson. Okay, so she.
She's pretty.
She's
Why
adorable.
Wouldn't she want to be?
She's single
with a man instead of with herself.
I think that she does want to be with a man, but she's pursued a career, and so she feels bad because she didn't meet the benchmarks, the societal benchmarks of marriage and family by the age of 25, which apparently is when you have to meet them, otherwise you're nothing, even if you've earned $1 million.
That's not the case. I thought women were like, we're supposed to be waiting until they're 30 or something or other, but to be before they're even married. Is that, she's 30 now, is that right?
Yeah.
So she had to meet somebody by 25?
Well,
I thought that was old days. Now everyone's getting married late, right?
No, it is old days, but she still feels the cultural, like we haven't gotten rid of the cultural baggage of that terrible idea that you should get married in your 20s and have children before you're 30. We still carry the weight of that.
Who's we? Like women?
Everyone. Everyone carries it.
Women?
You just don't know how much
women carry it. Is that every woman or is that every person?
I don't know.
Because I didn't feel much weight.
I know, I know. And most men can't be married before the age of 30 because it's really bad.
They shouldn't.
Because they're still babies.
Okay. Well, I guess men can have babies whenever they like, though.
That's true.
So I could, you can get married at 80 and still father children until you die, basically.
That doesn't help the conversation at hand.
So we have no biological clock, is what I'm saying.
No, I know that you don't. Thank you for telling everyone that again. Okay, so she's really sad, and I wrote about her, and I actually wasn't as mean as I could have been, because she has now coined the term self-partner. Instead of single, she's self-partnered, meaning that she's deciding to be content and satisfied with where she is, which I think is actually great. I think you should try to be content and satisfied with where you are and in your life. But I don't think you need a special word called the self-partner word.
And does she mean by that, like, what we would, when you're talking about partnering, now you can't use the word husband or wife anymore, or marriage. It's, you're partnered with somebody now, because marriage is, you know,
right, nothing.
Nothing, right? So, but when you're partnered with somebody, is she talking like in a weird romantic way that she's self-partnered?
I think it's a little bit of that. It's a little bit like self-marriage. I mean, she hasn't gone so far as to marry herself. She's partnering with herself.
She's not up for the commitment. Huh? She's not up for the commitment of marriage. Because if you marry yourself, that's a bigger commitment than partnering with yourself.
What if you turn yourself off
after a while? You might not want to be.
If you actually
say vows to yourself, there's something there.
No,
so
no. You can, even if you self-marry, you can still go marry somebody else. That's what everybody who has done self-marriage has always put that little clause in there. Like, if I meet someone, I'm still allowed to marry that person.
So that will herself be, feel betrayed by that, though?
No, because she's still gonna.
So
no,
is that, would this be, would this be, would this, would this, would this then be called, would this be polyamory? Because you're marrying yourself and you bring another person into the relationship, that makes.
Or polyandry. What? I don't know, they need to come up with a name.
Because then you have a weird three-way relationship going on with yourself and then somebody else.
Mm. Let me finish my sentence. I'm going to go do self-marriage. You don't stop being a jerk. You can get kits, self-marriage kits. Like, you
what?
Can get online, and they'll mail you everything that you need to do for your self-marriage.
What?
Yeah.
A kit?
Yeah. And it'll come with a ring and the vows and, like, a template for invitations, because you have to throw yourself
what?
A party. No, you actually do. People are actually doing self-marriage. I've written about this.
I know. I didn't know there was a kit or that you would have a party that people would actually come to. What would he do if we got an invitation in the mail to a self-marriage?
I mean, I would go.
Really? Okay, we talked about the self-partnering when it first came out, and
self-marriage, you mean.
This is the apex of the sin nature running its course. The you know, Paul in Romans 1 talking about the most visible sign of depravity in a culture is when we cease when people cease to have desires for the other sex and instead go toward their own, because it's a form of narcissism, self-love, self-exaltation, and so homosexuality is the bent of the human nature that drives you toward you. So now, but here, you know, we're just discarding the other person altogether.
Well,
and say, I don't even need another person like me. I just need me.
What I like about this is that, you know how when people were trying to affirm homosexuality in this quote, and the way that to do that is to say, well, Paul just didn't know. Paul didn't know.
Didn't understand.
Didn't understand. I guess, really, though, they're right. Because when he wrote
he didn't even think that we would
eventually have self-marriage. I would love to know what Paul
Although I think Paul would probably say, I made that comment on Facebook, and someone said, Paul would not be at all surprised by this, because self-marriage is just the same thing as a narcissistic homosexuality, but you're doing it with, you just discard it with the other person. It's just you.
I mean, it's the next logical step,
right.
I guess,
yeah.
In the chain of idolatry. So, okay, but can I read this comment that
yes.
I got? Because it's pretty great, and society is evil. Okay, so this person, I wrote about self-partnering. Why don't we just keep using the word single? And this person says, I completely disagree with the entire premise of this article. That was my article. For one, it displays the total lack of understanding married people have of what it's like to be single. See, I'm pretty sure I
do you, were you ever single or were you born married?
I was born married.
Do you have no experience of being single?
I did have a little bit of experience of being single.
I was 29 before I got married, so I had experience of being single.
Yeah.
So I was talking from my deep reservoir of knowledge.
Also, I have some dear friends who are single who have let me be in on their lives, and you know what? They're okay. They have, like, they really do rely on Jesus, and they are beloved by the church, and they pour out their lives for the sake of the gospel.
And it's not. Their life isn't just a pit of hell.
Yeah,
They're okay.
So anyway, but I have a complete lack of understanding. First of all, that's not true. The first statement is not true. Okay, to go on. To begin with, singleness has a lot of loaded and very negative cultural baggage. See, here's the problem.
I don't think
not
that's...
everything can have a lot of negative cultural baggage. Not, we can't have everything be insane.
Well, it's not everything. It's everything. It's everything that. Yeah, so, you know, the quote unquote progressives like to say that they're breaking the boundaries by doing this or that sexual act or this or that partner act with somebody else, and so they're going to receive a lot of condemnation from culture. The culture is completely radically changed now. They're going to be congratulated.
Yeah.
Were there a lot of people bashing on Emma Watson? No. People thought, this is wonderful. How great. Like, there's no more cultural baggage. The cultural baggage now is on the other side of the fence.
On the contrary. As a person who have given birth to more than one child. I have been called a breeder. Somebody thought that I was going to definitely go drown my children.
An Episcopalian.
Yeah.
I'm a lesbian priestess said you were going to kill your children.
Because I've had more than one and I was tired. I'm a tired.
Elizabeth Keaton is her name.
Yeah. So no, I don't agree with this at all. The negative cultural baggage is on the side of lifelong monogamous marriage that produces too many children for the culture to bear.
The carbon footprint of our family is like a Sasquatch.
It's actually less than people who, because we can't afford to do anything. And we reuse everything. So actually,
yeah, but our kids are breathing and they're letting out gases.
Oh, gosh.
They're using a lot of water. No, you see our water bill? We're using a lot of water.
But we recycle and we drive old cars.
That doesn't matter anymore. Recycling.
We don't fly anywhere. We don't jet off to Switzerland for the climate summit.
Yeah, well, we're driving old cars. That's the problem. If we were really caring about the environment, we'd buy the really expensive.
But also, we don't drive anywhere because we can't afford to buy gas. So actually, we just stay home. So,
our carbon
footprint is really small.
No, it's not. You're deluding yourself. We are the Sasquatch of carbon footprints.
Okay. So anyway, no, the negative cultural baggage has actually gone the other way. Okay, especially in the church. To be single is to be less important, sidelined, and othered.
What does that mean? What does othered mean?
Oh, well, othered is an old thing. To other, is it? Some, yeah, that's from the 90s. Where have you been?
That's othered.
What do you mean, the other? The other? That's like a trope.
What does it mean?
It's to put somebody in the category of stranger and alien and bad. The bad stranger.
Okay,
alien.
But see, it's good to be an alien other. And stranger now, isn't it?
Well, now, but not in, no. No. To other somebody is to make them feel bad about who they are.
Oh.
Again, this is not true. What if they should feel bad about who they are? In our church, to be single is to be adored. And you know what? Everybody's lives are difficult.
I think we should have
difficult.
More single. Yeah.
Everybody's lives are difficult. So some single people have difficult lives. Some married people
My
have
problem is too many of our
lives.
Singles are getting married now. They're like, we had a lot of single people, and now they all found each other. The few single people we had in our church found each other and are getting married. And so we're running out of single people. We need more single people to come to our church.
Yeah.
I mean, we have the teenagers and stuff, but that doesn't
count.
They
don't count. Oh right. My gosh, they don't count.
But we need more single people because yeah. We've run out.
I like, yeah, anyway, this is, we don't other our single people. We don't other anybody in our
Maybe
church.
That's just because Good Shepherd, maybe it's just because it's Good Shepherd, but every other church others.
Yeah, okay, so all churches in America mm-hmm. other their single people, all of them.
Yeah.
Okay, I know this. Because I belong to several deconstructing groups of ex-evangelicals on Facebook.
Why would I say it again? I know this because what? Because I belong to Facebook groups because for deconstructing evangelicalism?
I belong to several deconstructing groups of ex-evangelicals on Facebook, and many of the members...
Well, I mean, who can dispute that?
Many of the members are single, and they have reported these experiences in the group.
Well, you know, if that's clearly... an unbiased group of clear, steely-eyed, objective observers of cultural trends. deconstructing ex-evangelicals are clearly
on Facebook.
That's you can't get a more scientific sample of.
Okay, wait. It has also been my experience. So there you are. I'm in my 50s now and have never been married, and I can testify to the pain it gave me to be looked down upon, insulted, and most often simply ignored and marginalized due to my marital status.
Did someone really insult her for being a single?
Okay, yeah. Well, let's pause here and say that.
I mean well, if she went around churches, with this attitude, I can see how people might be upset.
Okay.
By her.
But also, I know, because I spend some time on Twitter, there are some really crazy churches out there
mm-hmm.
where all of the sermons are about how
that's
how
true.
Long your hair should be, what you should be wearing, mm-hmm. who you should be married to. So, yeah, I actually...
Well, she should go to a different church.
Yeah. Yeah, so...
That's not ex-evangelical. That's not evangelical. That's Independent Fundamentalist Baptist that you're talking about. I don't know if... Okay, so during the purity culture time, yes, you had evangelicals talking a lot about modesty and how to get married, and you had long and terminal sermon series on marriage and how to be married.
Yeah. It's awful.
That's true, but that doesn't mean...
But you know what you can do instead of becoming a victim? As you just said, you can go to another church. There are literally churches out there where this isn't the thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Where singleness isn't stigmatized and preaching isn't terrible. I don't think people avail themselves enough. I'm not for church hopping, believe me.
Well, no, but please, if you're being told constantly that you're a horrible person because you're single, I mean, that's clearly not a healthy church.
Right.
But I just doubt that that's really the case.
Okay.
Okay.
So here we are. Singleness is associated with loneliness, being disconnected, accused of selfishness, and other evil character traits. Who does that? Who goes up to single people and says you're selfish? I've never seen that.
Okay, that's what I'm preaching on next Sunday.
I've never heard of that.
All right, if you're here and you're single, I have 3 points for you. First,
you're selfish. Second, you're evil.
Six.
And third, you're disconnected and lonely. What?
Amen.
Amen. What is that? That is amazing. Also, I've never heard that. Yes. I've never heard anyone accuse single people of being selfish. Okay, no. Now, if you are a high-powered female person, like Emma Watson, maybe, mm-hmm. and you've put your career before everything else in your life,
mm-hmm.
and you've broken up with people because they wanted... Yeah.
Then yes, that's
then,
selfish.
Then yeah, that's kind of selfish.
Like, and then you bemoan the fact that you're not married. Then yeah, then I can see people saying, "Well, there's consequences for the decisions you made."
There are reasons to be single.
Right.
And there are reasons to be single. Okay, I grew up on the mission field, which incidentally is highly populated with single people, single women and men, but more women than men, who are the antithesis of selfish. And who do deal with loneliness,
right?
And disconnection when they go out into remote places. It's really hard, really, really hard. And they give their whole lives to Jesus. And I actually mm-hmm. do. The single people in our church who have given their lives over to the gospel almost exclusively have dealt with loneliness and feeling disconnected. And we've had to work really hard as a church to keep them integrated. And to make them part of the fam, so the verse, "I will set the lonely into families," is a guiding verse.
Yeah.
For us, that we make sure that people have family situations to go to, that people aren't alone right. at Christmas and Thanksgiving. My gosh. I love the lumping together of loneliness, disconnection, selfishness, and evil character traits. Like, loneliness is evil.
Like this, I don't know. Yeah,
that's insane. Okay, so anyway. And just not having a place in the larger community where you feel valued and welcomed as a full member. Yeah, I mean, go to a better church where you can feel valued.
Yeah.
And welcomed as a full member. It's literally a thing in, like, churches everywhere.
But I wonder how much of this has been brought on by her own decisions, because if you decide as a young person that you're going to be married at some point, but after you fulfill all of your life goals,
then
if you don't get married until you're 50, or don't get married at all, it's not everyone else's fault.
Yeah, there's different reasons. Like, so if you're following Jesus and you never meet anyone,
right,
because you've devoted your life to him, that's totally different than you deciding that you're not going to have children until you've gotten to be senior partner.
Right, right.
Anyway, okay. On the other hand, so that's me. That's me being bad. On the other hand, self-partnered is a term that originated with the polyamory community.
Well, that makes it much better.
So you were right. Polyamory has already adopted self-partnered.
Well, right, but what they mean is, I'm true to my own self. I'm going to be true, and that means that no one's going to keep me from having sex with who I want to have sex with.
In polyamory.
And so we're going to call it polyamory because it sounds really cool.
It sounds cool.
Yeah.
Okay. In the polyamory community, which is much better than the church community. I love how all the communities are here.
Everything has to be a community now. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
How do you, but I wonder if it's self, if there, is there a self-partnering community?
That's really funny. If there would be, like, there's the irony of the century. Our self-partnering community. That's insane. Okay. In the polyamory community, there is no such negative mythology built up around being single.
All right.
No kidding. Singles are not the have-nots, and married couples the haves.
Yeah. Well, because if you, more single people, if you're polyamorous, the better. All the picking going there.
On the contrary, many singles...
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to...
Go ahead.
I'm just trying to put my mind around the whole polyamory thing as if it's a...
I don't think you should try to do that. What do you mean?
I can't imagine, just on a basic human level, and maybe this is some narrow-minded and stupid and patriarchal, hey, I have a girlfriend, and I have this other guy who wants to be her boyfriend, and that's totally cool with me.
You know who polyamory is really great for? Men. Serially interested men who don't want to commit to one person.
Well, no, but most of the polyamorous couples I've looked at, I've heard about, or one woman with two men.
Well, that's true.
I mean, it's rarely one man with two women, or I guess it can be, but not always. And, or if it's the, if it's two women and a man, the two women are lesbians, and so it's weird. And
I don't think we should. I don't think we should take
a dive into this subject. Okay, but I'm just saying it's something is broken in the human person.
Yes.
if this is something that you think is just totally normal and healthy.
Okay, so, many singles in the poly community are simply solo polyamorous whose primary relationship is with themselves. Yes. Yeah. I have nothing to say to that. All other lovers and relationships are considered secondary.
And this is a good thing. This is the way of the future, because you're finally coming to terms with the fact that you are the most important person in the world.
You are
your greatest love of all. That's the gospel. This is the gospel of our day articulated. Find yourself.
Yeah.
Love yourself. Express yourself and exalt yourself, and then you'll be happy. And everyone else takes second fiddle.
As more singles borrow the term self-partnered from the polyamory community, I think they will succeed in breaking down the negative baggage associated with unmarried status. I think they already have. I think we've already passed that.
Yeah, I don't know the baggage is single, there anymore.
Single is a disempowering, stigmatizing label attached to individuals, like leprosy. That's my addition.
Did she say that?
No. And especially to women who aren't really accepted or welcomed in community. That is so malarkey. Self-partnered is an unmarried person who is nonetheless partnered, often many times over, and connected within a larger web of supportive and warm community.
Yeah, yeah, I'm sure. But it's basic. Isn't this just like the 60s free love kind of thing?
Yeah.
There's no real difference?
And it, you know, like, where is all the happiness? There was promised to be so much happiness.
Well, this person sounds really happy.
I know. The supportive and warm community is obviously working out really well for her. And she's happy.
Yeah, yeah.
So it is
interesting, though, that there's a wholesale rejection of the idea that the giving yourself up can lead to any kind of joy whatsoever. Even in pagan circles, or not pagan, but unbelieving circles 30 or 40 years ago.
There was
this idea that, okay, giving yourself to something else, some great cause or some great person.
Well, like the Veterans Day, like, you know, you would give your life for your country. You would sacrifice yourself for your children. You would sacrifice yourself for this or that, or even, yeah,
and that's gone, because, I mean, not that the people don't join the military, but they join the military. But people, I mean, even the military is sometimes, which, if you listen to some recruiting,
you can be an army of one.
Right. Well, or, you know, this is how you get ahead. It's all about you adding to your skill sets. And, you know, the whole idea of self-sacrificing your body and life to your country is way not down the list of motivators for people. I'm not saying that's too broad a generalization. I mean, I think there are many people who still join for that purpose, to give themselves up. But the recruiting, the message of the army has had to be more self-focused in order to attract more people. I read an article about this somewhere at some point. Maybe it was revealed to me in a dream. I can't remember which one.
It was revealed to you in a dream.
A
lot of things have been revealed to me in a dream.
But, well, even, you know, remember Paula White, who we were going to talk about? Do you remember her saying?
Yeah, she said, if God tells you, or if
anyone
tells
who tells
you,
to give up to give yourself up, or
to deny yourself,
it's from this devil.
Yeah. I mean, that's...
And Jesus literally said... if anyone comes to me, he must forsake himself.
You know who else thought Jesus was from the devil?
Take up his cross and follow me, yeah.
Like, the Pharisees of his day, who brought about his death, thought he was from the devil.
Yes.
So, that's kind of an old... That's been tried.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's really tragic. Really, really tragic. So... I just want to say that I really value single people, and I don't want you to be lonely, and I don't think you're evil, and I want to wrap you in the warm embrace of community.
Yeah, we have mission groups for that.
In the church.
In the Bible study. And
we do lots of things.
We do single people.
You know what else? You know who else can be really lonely? I'm looking for this. Disconnected and lonely. People who are in terrible marriages.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
like, that in difficult marriages, there's a deep loneliness in the middle of that.
I've been really amazed by the reaction to the marriage class we're doing. And I mean, when I do systematic theology for Christian Ed, the numbers aren't quite...
You don't have quite the full room that we have right now.
I think we had like 50-something people in the room
it
for Christian Ed.
It was full. There were people standing in the back.
Yeah, and when I do systematic theology, it's not bad. We get, you know, 20, 30.
I mean, I think you should be grateful that people want to hear about
it. I am, but I just wish they had the same zeal and devotion for systematic theology and for history and for, you know.
It's just be you being judgmental. You need to accept people. If people self-identify as people who aren't interested in systematic theology, they're just following their hearts. And who are you to judge?
Well, anyway, the room is full, and I think there are a lot of people in our church, and they're probably the same thing as in other churches, where their marriages are
tough.
Yeah,
maybe not like really unhappy, but tough. Like, it's contentious and difficult, and you just can't. So, we've done 2.5 on communication alone, and we're not quite done.
Here's how I know that the people are not. There's not a cultural stigma for being single anymore, because if any one of these couples in our church who are having difficulties were to go to a secular counselor, what's the first thing they would tell them?
get divorced.
Yeah, you need a divorce.
You're not happy.
You're not happy, so you need to...
You need to become happy.
Yeah. I mean, I think singleness is becoming the ideal because you're satisfied. You're to your own self, you're being true, which you must do.
Yeah. So, well, anyway, should we listen to Stephen Furtick?
Yeah, that's a better way to round off the show.
I think we should round this out with a great Stephen Furtick moment.
If you don't know Stephen Furtick...
Everybody knows Stephen Furtick.
He's an evangelical. He's in the Southern Baptist...
He's not evangelical.
Yes, he is. He's in the Southern Baptist Convention. And he is the... His chief superpower is narcissism.
Being a bad at biblical exegete.
Narcissism is when you read a passage of the Bible and you read yourself into that passage of the Bible as the hero. So the classic example is if you are reading about David and Goliath, you say that you read that and say, "Oh, I'm like David, and my problems in my life are like my Goliath's." And so you look at the story and you figure out the tips. I mean, how did David defeat his Goliath? He had 5 smooth stones that he got from a riverbed. What are the 5 smooth stones in my...
Or the Pachamama. My 5 smooth stones that I'm throwing in the river are... Yeah. Oh, no. That's throwing them in, not taking them out. Sorry.
Yeah, you're confusing things here.
Okay, I think everybody knows what narcissism is.
I don't think so.
Okay, so I'm going to...
We have a truckload of new listeners, though. Did you know that?
Our new listener...
Our stats are, like, incredible. I don't know what happened. Maybe it's me.
You shouldn't say it out loud because you're going to jinx it. We got a really nice, really nice email. I actually got 2 really nice emails in less than a week. I forgot to show you the other one. Oh. Of people who are just really grateful that we take it out of our time to enlighten the world with our wisdoms.
Oh, they should be grateful.
They should be grateful. Okay, so it's going to be hard for me to cue this up. It's going to come on in the middle, and I'll just dial it back. So hang, because it's... Okay. And I should...
How many times have I been discouraged and weary in my own soul, only to find that when I took 5 minutes to be a blessing to someone else, when I sowed what God gave me, it became what I needed?
What?
I have no idea. But you know what's really great about weariness? When you have to work harder, you're really tired, and you go to Jesus, and you're like, "I'm so tired." And Jesus is like, "Get out there. You get out there, and you keep working. You lazy. You need to sow what I gave you."
I don't think that's... What's he talking about?
I don't know. Shall we go on?
Yeah.
This is difficult because when you are in a season of need in your own life, the last thing you want to do is to sow into something else.
Yeah.
So
if you're in a season of need,
who's not in a season of need? So, but what you need to do to get out of the season of need is to give?
To sow into something else. Right?
So, see, now sowing is interesting.
Not sowing like cloth.
No, I know, but like seed, but this is akin to the prosperity gospel here, because that's what they'd say. You give to get.
So he's going to say that.
Yeah.
Am I right about it?
No.
When you
no,
are
you're not.
Out of energy, the last thing that you want to think about is anything other than you. But the only way for you to receive what you need is to give what you have.
Right.
The only way for you to receive what you need is to give what you have.
So that's what Jesus meant when he said, "Come to me, you who are..."
All you who are labor and are heavy laden, and
I will give you rest.
No, what he meant to say is, and I will tell you to
give
go
you
back.
Another burden. Yeah, go you back, work harder.
I'll tell you to go work harder.
But from Jesus, give and it will be given to you. That's not a financial scripture. That's a scripture about anything. If you give
He's right about that.
What you have, God will give to you what was already inside of you, waiting to be sown in something that is bigger than you.
I can't understand what he said there. Just
okay, let's try this again.
So if
this is crazy.
Give and it will be given to you. That's not a financial scripture. That's a scripture about anything. If you give what you have, God will give to you what was already inside of you, waiting.
God will give. if you give what you have, God will give you what was already inside of you, waiting to be given.
To be sown in something that is bigger than you.
Waiting to be sown. Okay, so if you...
But it's already inside of you.
I'm not...
I don't know. I've never heard what that means.
What does that mean? Okay, so wait. We should do, you know, because all error has some element of truth, and
okay,
and there is an element of truth in this. God, you do give, to those who give, much will be given to them. There's a principle there.
If they are believers, if they've already received something from Jesus, and they go on and give something away, people who just give outside of the kingdom of God aren't really going to get anything. Like, the much that they have will be taken away from them later. The key is faith in Jesus.
Yeah.
It's not like a principle of magic. Like, I will give this, and then
God will give me this,
and then I will give, and, you know, one for one.
I mean, it's definitely true that what he pours into you, it's good for you to pour out to others. That's a true thing.
Yeah.
And it's true that when you do that, God's grace you find that God's grace is sufficient to sustain you, and he does build you up through your giving of yourself. That does happen. But that doesn't, I think there's a magical quality to what he's saying.
Yeah.
That you're going to get some, like, really good stuff.
Well, there's already embedded in you, I guess he's already embedded in you some kind of seed that can't come to fruition until you've...
Yeah.
Whereas, actually, there's nothing in you. There's no seed planted in you that, like, can only be germinated when you give it away.
Yeah.
Like, God's grace goes through... It's God's grace.
I think this is the text he's narcigeting. Judge not and you will not be judged. Condemn not and you will not be condemned. Forgive and you will be forgiven. Give and it will be given to you. Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, we put into your lap. For with the measure you use, it will be measured back to you.
Right.
And that's Luke chapter 6, verses 37 through 38. And the context is really important here. Judge not and you will not be judged. Condemn not and you will not be condemned. Forgive and you will be forgiven.
So there's a little bit tip for tat. You know, like if God forgives you, the unjust
mm-hmm.
servant or the unmerciful servant, and God forgives you, and then you turn around and demand from somebody else what's owed to you, which is a paltry and nothing thing, God isn't going to be happy with you.
Well,
and
in that parable, Matthew 18, the problem is guy really wasn't.
Yeah, it shows, that illustrates that you did not receive the forgiveness that was offered to you. You maybe asked for it, but you didn't grab hold and take it
right.
And then go away forgiven. You went away unjustified, really.
Right. You really can't give more than you gain. So Mary of Bethany pouring out the nard on Jesus' feet and head. That was very expensive nard. We compared it to today's income, $30,000. And, you know, I know if I were there, I'd be saying, please don't break that. We can sell that. We can get money.
No, it's because you don't love Jesus as much.
Yeah, I know.
I
mean, I would.
I would have been like, yay.
But she pours it on Jesus' feet and his head. And what did she lose? I mean, earthly terms, she probably, I don't know that she, but there's no sense. You don't read about Mary Bethany then getting a hundredfold increase in her nard.
Right.
Her nard.
I mean, Jesus dies after that.
Right.
And then she's part of the beleaguered, poor, persecuted church in Jerusalem.
So what did she get out of that?
I mean, she...
I mean, because, you know, she gave. What did she get?
I mean, she already had gotten everything and was grateful. And so she gave herself to Jesus because she was grateful.
I think that gift was an opening, a further opening of the heart and soul to receive more of Christ.
Yeah.
I mean, she's obviously already justified and going to heaven, but that's what giving does, is it does open open you to receive more of Christ.
Or to notice how much you're receiving of Christ.
Like, yeah.
It's not like God is also not giving you things, but you often, the ears of faith might be closed. You don't see or hear things. You don't understand. You don't perceive how much it is that God has given you. All you can see is how tired you are, which I totally get. Like, One interesting thing about working really hard when you're exhausted, you know, and okay, so Jesus is really, really tired, and he goes to a desolate place because he has nothing more to give. He's exhausted. It doesn't say he has nothing more to give. He's just tired. In his humanity, he's exhausted. And the crowd follows him, and he doesn't say, "I need a rest now. Go home because I'm resting."
Right.
The Christian life is often like that. You are utterly spent. You've done. You have nothing left, and it's at that moment that somebody comes along and says, or there's a death, or there, you know,
yeah,
a bad thing happens when you think you can't take it anymore. And then, God's grace is sufficient for you, right. And you find that you can keep giving, you can keep going. I mean, that's a really difficult and terrible place to be, and God shows you how big and good he is in the middle of that.
And that's sustaining. That's what you gain after you give. Is more of, I think
when you realize more of Christ is was enough, right. And you didn't die, and you realized how rich he was in the middle of that.
Right.
But there's no like sowing of it, and there wasn't what you see in that moment is that there wasn't anything inside of you that was going to make you keep going.
Right.
Like that reveals to you how personally nothing you are and have
is going to make,
and that you need the alien strength of Christ.
Yeah.
Who's enough for you? Yeah. Well, anyway, I'm glad we've sorted that out.
Are you going back to Stephen Furtick, or is it over?
No, that was it.
Oh, that was it?
That was it.
He didn't unpack the
that was it.
Giving of the self being the good.
No, I thought that was it. That's all we've got. How many times have I been discouraged?
Okay.
Whoa.
He's got, you know, he's, look at him, he's like, he's changed. Remember when we first started watching him, he was very skinny, and now he's bulked up.
He's pretty cut now.
Yeah.
His beard is weird, though, like.
He also apparently has a bullpen, you know what that is? We should do this at Good Shepherd.
Oh, yeah.
He has people who are her volunteers who sit in the front rows of the church, and when he makes a point, they clap and cheer and say, "Yeah, amen, yeah, ooh, ah." We need that. That's Good Shepherd.
Yeah.
I want a bullpen.
The bullpen that does not exist for you.
I know, it's very quiet.
There's just an austere group of people listening to see if you are going to mess up. No, I mean people. Actually, the great thing about Good Shepherd is people open up the Bible.
They do. They
while
do.
You're preaching, and you can hear all the pages fluttering.
That's nice.
So if you make people turn from one page to the other, they actually know how to do that. So yeah. That's really great.
John hasn't had a lot of that. Like Hebrews, you're always going back and forth to the Old Testament.
You just have the quietness of... we're not a demonstrative... There's no shouting and yelling like the IFB preachers, which we should do some
we
of
should
those
do a
clips.
Show on the... We
should just do like clip after clip, clip after clip.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we should.
Because one thing the IFB has in common with the Narcissus is that it's all about you doing a lot of work.
Yeah.
The fundamentalists and the...
prosperity people are kind of the same.
You better do more work.
But so are the ex-evangelicals. The evolving faith people, those people, like, if you're tired, that doesn't matter. You better get out there and do more.
Yeah.
You better use the right pronouns. You better be working for justice. You better not sit down, you know, you've got to bring about peace on earth right now or yesterday. Listening to all that, it was really exhausting, and I felt really grieved for people who are really actually lonely, alienated, exhausted, abused, going to conferences and being told that they need to get out there and work hard. I thought that was really awful. So... No, you can trust Jesus and it'll be okay. So, but I have to go on with our lives because I've got to take our child to get a different kind of splint today. And also I have to do all the things. So, we'll probably be back next week because this is the season of Thanksgiving. We should do an extra
We need a very special Thanksgiving podcast. So
we'll work on that.
We'll give recipes and how to make your family gathering the most acrimonious. How to pick an argument at the Thanksgiving table.
We should do tips for the worst Thanksgiving ever.
How to bring the Donald Trump presidency into every Thanksgiving dinner.
Oh, that would be good. I saw the
You've got to have plants on the table. Like, someone who's going to say something about Donald Trump. Someone's going to say something about that they're gay or something.
I saw the Donald Trump sticker for 2020 on somebody's truck because Broome County loves Trump. Parts of Broome County love Trump. And it was a huge, big pickup truck. And it said, Trump 2020, making liberals cry again. I kind of love it, but...
I would love to be around that guy's Thanksgiving table.
Yeah. I bet he is invited.
I bet he's a dear friend to his whole family.
Okay, well, thank you for listening, and we'll be back next week.